Hey everyone, welcome to My Two Cents with Tawanda Harris. This is a podcast dedicated to educators, for educators, and by educators. Yes, it's all about encouraging, it's all about sharing strategies, it's all about going on an educational journey with each other. You are not alone, and I hope that when you finish listening to this podcast, you feel like you went on a journey with educators around the world. Thank you for tuning in to My Two Cents. Welcome to this episode of My Two Cents. I had the opportunity to sit down with Isla Tawheed, also known as Izzy. She's a teacher that helps little people grow up to become free big people. She's a radical dreamer and abolitionist. She teaches in the Bronx, but is Newark raised. Listen in as we hear her teacher journey story. Okay, can you share with us your teacher journey?
Yes. So I love my teacher journey. I say I was born in a school because my mother was a teacher, a special education teacher in Newark, New Jersey. That's my hometown. And so I grew up in a school. My mother was the typical teacher mom. She took me to her class to set up in the summer, and everything in my house was for those kids. I hated her students so much. Including she would take my books, that's fine. But then she took my pet.
Kind of pet was it?
She got me, I was six and I still remember it. I am going to be 36 in 11 days. And I remember this very clearly. I had these green and blue parakeets. And I wanted these parakeets so much. And she took them to be her class pet. And after that, her students were, they were my nemesis. And I was like, no.
Rightfully so.
But I always wanted to be a teacher. I used to play teacher. I always wanted to be a teacher. My mother said, do not be a teacher. Whatever you do, don't become a teacher. And so I went to school and I was a biologist. I was a pharmacist in undergrad. For 3 years, I had a science-based major and I hated it. And I was like, you know, I'm going to drop out of college. I just really wanted to be a teacher. And my mother said, okay.
She finally yielded.
Finally. She was like, do what you love.
It's like a calling. It's like a calling. You can't help it. You can't shake it. You just keep going right back to it.
It was all I wanted to do. So I was so happy. I became a teacher in Newark. And I went, my first year teaching, I was at the school my grandmother went to when she was a child, Miller Street School in Newark, but it's closed now. But my grandmother got to watch me teach, and it was just the best moment ever.
Wow. I remember like my first year teaching, my parents, they were here helping me move into my classroom my first year. And I just remember being so excited. And they were moving desks around. Now, mind you, I'm making all of these arrangements outside of my students. I hadn't even met my students. So, you know, of course, as a first year teacher, you're just like, okay, this will be my area here where I have my small group. And this is where my my classroom library. And then when your students get in there and you realize that you have to rearrange everything so that it's student-centered and it's focused on them. But we had a great time moving that furniture.
It's the lessons you learn when you're a first year teacher, but it's so much fun. And I was so proud and so pleased that I was able to teach in my community. Now I teach in New York, but during the first 3 years, I was in my hometown. I graduated from college in my hometown. My grandmother was there and my grandmother, she was not a teacher, but she was an educational activist. Okay. And she had all of these awards from the mayor for all of her volunteer work she did in schools. And they named the cafeteria after her.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So you got it honest. There was no funding for me. You were like, I'm trying to get back to where I'm supposed to be.
Right. Exactly.
So that's awesome. That's awesome. And what an honor to have your grandmother watch you teach.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure she was smiling from ear to ear.
She was. We had done a lesson for Black History. We were teaching about jazz, and my grandfather was a jazz musician. And at that time, my grandfather had passed. He lived a long life. He was 98, but my grandmother is like much younger than my grandfather. So she was able to have the kids interview her about my grandfather and tell all these stories about him. So it just was, stands out in my head forever and ever as one of my most memorable lessons that I've done.
Well, I'm sure it stands out also in your students' head to just be able to, you know, be fully, you know, engaged in the questioning or just the whole experience where it's not me just reading it in a book, but I'm able to talk to a live human being about that experience. How cool is that? Well, I mean, you recently have been interviewed on CNN regarding virtual teaching. Dun, dun, yes. Dun. You know, that's where we are in the world right now. Of course, it has its pros and its cons, but they interviewed you about your virtual teaching experience and, you know, described and highlighted the importance of you feeling that your students are in, they are in a space in which they feel safe, they feel happy, loved, while also being able to thrive by being themselves. How did you get to that point?
I was an undergrad college student, like everyone, in a teacher training program, and they had us write this teaching philosophy. And I wrote this whole long teaching philosophy, and I had all the quotes, and I quoted Dewey, and I quoted this one, I quoted that one. And then I became a teacher, and I had to really think and say to myself, what is your philosophy now as a teacher in the classroom looking at students? And it's almost like your story about when you were rearranging the furniture, or you were arranging the furniture for the first time and the kids weren't there. Mm-hmm. And you had these ideas of what it would be like. And then when the kids came, you had to co-construct that space. And that's how it was for me. So when I thought about what is truly my philosophy as a teacher, what is the environment that I wish to create, these points were most important to me, for the students to feel safe, for them to feel happy, and for them to feel loved and to thrive being themselves, standing in their identities, standing as beings who come to our spaces, experts in the things that make them happy and the things that make them upset, and the ways they wish to be praised and the ways they love to learn. So just honoring that full individual in my classroom, that became my philosophy, whether I'm virtual.
I mean, just really seeing the humanity in the individuals that walk through the door. You know, I think sometimes when we, as adults, have students come into our classroom or our space, we sometimes believe that we are the giver of all knowledge. Mm-hmm. I am here to make you a better person, but, you know, I challenge that because over the years, I realized that it was really my students who taught me.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that space of feeling safe, feeling happy, feeling loved, mm-hmm. I wanted to create that because that's where I thrived. So I remember closing the door and saying, this is our world.
That's
this is
right.
We are community, you know, we are here for each other. And like, what a relaxing space that is.
Honestly, I resonate so much with that, especially when people say, oh, you're a teacher, you mold their minds. And I'm like, I try to leave their minds alone. I try my best to leave their minds alone, because you can see from preschool and pre-K, by the time probably third, fourth, fifth, the domestication of children, it's kind of sad. But if you leave their minds alone and you leave them to explore and show you what they're worth, they will show you everything that they have in them. So creating that space was important to me in my physical classroom. Mm-hmm. And then when we moved to the virtual space, I felt such a loss. You know, I didn't have my things. I don't have my rug. I don't have my document camera. I don't have, you know, I don't have those walls in which, yes, I used to close the door and make my own world. But I could still make the kids feel safe, and I could still make the kids feel happy and still have them thrive being themselves. And so that was our starting point. When I felt like I lost everything in remote learning, like that was our starting point, and we went from there. And it became better.
I saw you had a recent post. I think it was bringing snacks.
Yes.
You want your students to bring food because it's comforting, or it's it's that sense of, you know, we're here fellowshipping and enjoying each other's presence.
Yeah, just like adults, right? When you're with your friends, and you, even when we're doing learning workshops or book clubs, you always have to have the snacks, right? You have the snacks and then you chat about it. So that was important for me to let them know you can eat here, and you can, you know, when people come to your home, you take off your shoes, take your shoes off and come on in, because we are in the student's house. We're, we are now.
Oh gosh, yes.
Hold off, grab a snack, and let's do this.
I often say this, this is, and I know this might be contrary to what some may believe, but being in a virtual space gives us an opportunity to finally connect students' school lives to their home lives.
Yes.
And when it's like the squares on the screen are the window into their home lives. Mm-hmm. And we have to be invited into that space. It's not a, I need you to turn your camera on, or I need you to sit up straight, and I need you to do this. No, it's like if I were to come in your home and say, hey, I need this table moved over here just a little bit more so I can be comfortable. No, that's, I'm sure you would look at me crazy. Mm-hmm. I heard the because it's your space.
It is. And that's their space. And we have no jurisdiction there. You know, it's their home. And also, we often think about the kids turning off their camera or writing in the chat box or whatever behavior they're doing as an affront to us in our control, right? As teachers, like I'm the one in charge, not realizing that these kids, especially the ones that are a little bit older, have interpersonal relationships that are very important to them.
Yes.
More than they are important to us. I know, shock. Like the kids care about their friends more than they care about us. And so if you are, you know, young and you got a little baby crush on someone that's looking in your home.
That's serious. That will rock your world. That rocks your world more than math homework.
That's right. So just thinking about, again, the kids are fully formed beings, and they have all these little emotions inside of them, and we have to honor them and treat them with some kindness.
Yes. Well, yeah, I totally agree. I definitely agree. And I think about, you know, when we abruptly went to the virtual setting in March, how there were some things that we had to figure out really quickly. But going into the new school year, there were some things that we experienced that we did well, and some things that we experienced that we did not so well. What are some of the takeaways that you got from the March through May or June? I forgot up north, you all go to about June.
Yeah, it feels like July.
In May. But, you know, what were some of those things that brought that you took into the new school year?
This one is challenging because in New York City, we had so many changes when the school year began. And so when the school year ended at the end of June, it's like June 26th, our school year ends. I had all of these ideas, right? Like, I didn't know how to do anything. I didn't know Google Classroom. I didn't know anything about online learning remote platforms. I knew none of it. And I had spent March until about June seeing every YouTube video imaginable, doing every workshop possible. I was like, Pear Deck, like all of them, Nearpod, where are they? And so I had all of these ideas. And then When the school year ended, I assumed we will begin virtual. I said, okay, when we get back in September, we're going to be virtual. And I really have to allow the students to create the space. Mm-hmm. Like, even with all of this knowledge that I knew, I was like, I'm going to begin the school year, letting the students shape the space, and realizing, because at the time I taught second grade, that their parents are just as much a part of our classroom or mm-hmm. whoever their learning partner is as they are. So you might not see them on the screen, but there's always somebody off to the side with this child mm-hmm. and inviting them in the space as well. So that was my idea over the summer. How could I create this much larger classroom community? Now it's not just my students, it's my students double, where it has always been that way. Parents have always been learning partners, but just in a more visceral way, because yes. you can see them, you can hear them, and they can hear you in real time. So that has been something that has stuck with me, even though I ended up teaching in person instead of remotely, making those bonds with the parents. So talking to them before the school year began, making sure I do the weekly check-ins, seeing how they like to maintain communication. Mm-hmm. All of that was important, because we did eventually end up going back remote. Now we're back in person. Who knows what will happen? Mm-hmm. But at any point, the students' home could become their classroom again. And I wanted to make sure that the kids knew that me and your home partner are all in this learning environment yes. together.
That's powerful. I mean, you know, when you validate not only the value of the student in your classroom, but you add that layer of, no, not just you, your mother, your mm-hmm. father, your grandmother, your uncle, your cousin, your caretaker, whoever it is that is at home, I am just as interested in them being a part of your life than just you being in my classroom, because I know that who you are is shaped by all of those experiences exactly. that you had with those individuals. So mm-hmm. I value that.
Yes. I think in education, especially when you are teaching students of color, there's so much of their home life that they think they need to shed before mm-hmm. they enter your classroom spaces. Yes. And so you hear a lot of kids say, you know, especially if they speak two languages, oh, you know, I say this here, but not at home, or I do this here and not at home. Mm-hmm. And even with teachers, you know, I'm a Black teacher. There's ways that I act in my house that I don't mm-hmm. act at work.
Yes.
You know, let your hair down, be a little bit more relaxed, whatever it is. And so now, again, those lines are blurred. And to let the students know that the parts of them that they may have previously shed mm-hmm. are welcome. You know, you don't have yes. to get that here. I've got a glimpse of it, and I like it, and bring mm-hmm. more of that to the table.
Yes. Yeah. And you embrace it. You know, mm-hmm. you definitely embrace it, and you think about how that just adds value to the relationship.
Yes.
So, you know, you think of you as an adult, who you're closest with. It's the person that you can be yourself most
right.
with.
Exactly. And I think that some people may hear this and say, oh, you know, that sounds all well and good, or I don't have time for that. But I know our OG teaching mama, she's a teaching mama in my brain, Zaretta Hammond. When you read Zaretta Hammond, Culturally Responsive yes. Teaching in the Brain, it's mm-hmm. not just fluff. It's neuroscience. Mm-hmm. Forming these learning partnerships yes. helps students learn better scientifically in their brain. They grow more synapses that connect the person to what they're learning, because the feeling is positive. Yes. And so when the kid remembers something that happened in my virtual class, we were reading a book, and the book had this poem in Spanish. And the student's mom came, she was, I'll help you. And she read it, and we all clapped for her.
Oh, wow.
You know, they're going to remember that. That's a yes. much positive, much stronger experience. That synapse is going to be much longer lasting as our students, because their brains are still forming, as they form into adulthood, and your brain decides what you keep and what do you lose, they're going to keep the things that feel good. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that we're creating these spaces that feel good. And that was a big focus of mine this school year.
That's good. So, you know, I look at your posts and I just hear you talk, and I know that environmental justice and, you know, sustainability and environmental justice is something that is important. It should be weaved into every classroom, but unfortunately we know that that is not the case. I've been in classrooms in which the curriculum is the only thing that is taught. If it's not in the book, we're not going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, you know, the world things are happening in the world right now. Like, there are some major things happening in the world that our students are experiencing. Mm-hmm. Why are we not connecting their learning to what's happening in the world and what's happening in their lives? But this is something that is weaved in the thread of your classroom. Yeah. Have you seen an impact in your students and how they're engaged in the learning because of your intentionality to that?
Absolutely. I again, when you connect things that have a very visceral reaction and are very apparent, sometimes it feels like it's not for teachers that may say they don't have time, mm-hmm. but again, the world is all around you. Also, I feel that teachers themselves have so many various interests. You know, teachers could be into sewing, bring that in the classroom. Teachers could be into healthy eating, bring that in the classroom. And so in my own personal life, I'm very much trying. I'm going to say trying, not always succeeding in living a very sustainable life. So being careful of consuming plastics and, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, clothes waste is a big one because a girl likes to shop, but I'm trying.
I like to shop, but I don't like to wash the clothes that I've shopped.
That part, yeah, laundry is never ending. That's not going to go anywhere. Sustainability and environmental justice is a big part of cultural relevance also. So when you're making your lessons and you're trying to look for ways where you can infuse cultural responsiveness, that's a perfect way to go. Because if you look back to history, currently it seems as though the sustainability and environmental justice movement is headed by like young white females. Mm-hmm. And I have no problem with Greta Thunberg, she's amazing. But also you can look at the kids and the farmers that have been leading this movement for decades now. Mm-hmm. Black farmers, a lot of the Latino farmers, the migrant workers in California who were seeing what was being done to the land and things that were happening to the crops and the ways that planting was changing and the ways they were being treated. Indigenous practices and a lot of environmental racism, mm-hmm. things that were happening in neighborhoods filled with Black and Brown people that were not happening in neighborhoods filled with white people. And so you can point this out to the students because it's not history, it's things that are happening today. Yes. So when I talk about my hometown and you talk about my teaching journey, when I started teaching in Newark, New Jersey, I had a classroom full of students that had lead poisoning. That's really where this idea began for me. And I'm like, why do all of these kids, young kids, they were first graders, have lead poisoning? Wow. And I'm looking at the neighborhood and it's right by an airport and a lot of the buildings were old, a lot of old buildings, mm-hmm. peeling paint, lead poisoning. And they used to be factories and they converted these factories into these apartment buildings. Now in the Bronx where I teach, a lot of the students are out with asthma-related absences. And so the students and I, and at the time, again, I taught second grade, we looked at why is this, right? Mm-hmm. And it became almost a math problem, interdisciplinary, really.
Definitely.
Right? Math, science, social studies, everything. Yeah. And looking at, okay, what are the numbers? What are the causes? What does it say? What are the implications? And asking questions the students can ask. Why are there 3 waste facilities in the Bronx, but none in Manhattan? Why are there more trucks driving through our neighborhoods, than other neighborhoods. So all of these issues become real life issues day to day, and the implications are high because it affects their very beings. It affects the way they breathe. It affects mm-hmm. what they eat. It affects what they see. It affects their friends and their family. So bringing these issues into the classroom is immediately engaging because the kids want to see change mm-hmm. right away. Like, they notice the problems and they want to see change right away. So it's very much life or death. And so their very lives are impacted and they're invested in it. And so the engagement is very high, and they're probably my most favorite units to teach.
I mean, and it makes perfect sense. You know, when you learn something new and you immediately make a connection to your world, you as the person mm-hmm. learning it feel empowered, and mm-hmm. you feel like you have what it takes to make change or be a part of the change. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't become this idea of, oh, I have to be a certain age in order to do this, or I have to, you know, I'm only a child. No, I know about it, so I can speak about it. I can speak against that injustice that is happening.
Yes, I love that you said that, because a lot of kids do think I'm just a kid. And during these units is when I tell them, children can make big changes. Little children can make big changes. Let me show you how. You can use writing. You can use math. You can use your voice. You have a platform. And so it's to see these young people speak with such force and such power and demand changes in their neighborhoods and their communities. I love it. That's really my favorite thing.
Well, you have a treat for your students every week. I don't know if you're still doing it, but I thought it was a really cool concept. Miss Tawheed and Friends.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
This also was birthed out of going remote and the feeling of being losing a lot of things in your classroom. And so I spoke about the classroom rug and how the rug was our space. When things were happy, we celebrate on the rug. You know, you come in the day, you sit on the rug in a circle and you greet each other. And when we went remote, there was no rug. And I was like, well, how will I teach children? There's no rug for me to sit and have them listen to a story. And I realized that the rug was just widened. Now the rug was in all of our houses. And so the friends, right, Miss Tawheed and Friends, my friends all offered to replace what I thought I had lost, this community. A lot of my friends said, well, I'll show your kids how I, you know, bake bread, and I'll talk to the kids about their anxieties, and I'll talk to the kids about writing. And so all of these people offered to help, and my classroom just became that much bigger. And so we began doing Miss Tawheed and Friends, and they were my literal friends. And they would come in once a week. Or my family. My cousin is a therapist, and she talked to the students about how to self-soothe. It was very nice. Wow. And then the parents, after a couple weeks, the parents said, well, I would like to share something. And the parents began to be the guests on Miss Tawheed and Friends. And so it was just so beautiful. It was my favorite time of the week. I do not do Miss Tawheed and Friends this year. Not yet. I'm going to say not yet.
Yes, not yet.
Not yet. Yeah. But last year, it for sure was a great way to have these conversations about who the students are, who is in their community, and how our community offers, everyone in our community has an offering and something to share and something that we can learn from. It's not just people and strangers we don't know in books. It's the people we see every day. Mm-hmm. And so the kids were looking forward to it. They love to ask questions. Some of them were silly, some were serious, but we welcomed them all.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That I'm sure, like, you have given them so many wonderful memories to just kind of think back on times where someone came to visit and they learned mm-hmm. more about something. Regardless, it probably won't even remember what it was. specifically that they learned about, but they remember the experience and how they felt when they did it.
Yeah. You could see little baby journalists, because there were some students that were always ready with the questions.
Oh my goodness.
Like, wow, okay, you're gonna be on CNN. Like, some of these kids were always ready with the questions, and the guests would be like, whoa, I thought this was the second grade. I said it is, but my Miss Tahee students are sharp.
I felt old when this happened, but I remember I had a student in my classroom, and he was very just athletic. He was a kinesthetic learner. Very thoughtful, you know, very energetic. I just loved him to pieces. Well, I was in the grocery store and I heard someone say, Miss Davis, because that was my maiden name. Is that Miss Davis? And he was with an older lady. Well, it was his mom. And I could hear him on the side, and he comes up to me and he said, are you Mrs. Davis? And I said, yes. And he said, I am so-and-so. And he goes, do you remember me? You were my third grade teacher. And I was like, oh my goodness gracious. He goes, I just took the test to be a fireman. It just made my heart so full to see how, you know, how excited he was and how he remembered me and my teaching and the experience that he had in the classroom, and to see his personality just grow into, you know, who he is as an adult, just made it all the better.
I'm so looking forward to that. I think because my kids are so young, and I'm always saying, oh, they're not gonna remember me. I'm just their first grade. Everybody remembers their high school teacher, never their first teacher. But Alessandra Ocasio-Cortez, she had that moment, remember, on Twitter, where her third grade teacher was like, you got this, remember the poems we had in school? And I'm like, oh, that's what I want.
Yes, yes.
Remember that.
It's so amazing.
And
we are going to end with some rapid fire questions. These are just some fun questions that will give listeners more insight on who you are. They don't require a whole lot of explanation, but you can just tell me the first thing that comes to your mind. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. What is your favorite snack?
Popcorn.
Just regular popcorn, butter popcorn, flavor popcorn.
Probably it's this Himalayan pink salt popcorn. That's my favorite. I'm a salty snack girl. So popcorn, chips, those are my go-tos.
Oh, that sounds really, really good. Okay. So what is your favorite topic to teach about?
Can I just say writing?
Yes. I love all, because that's general enough to say whatever topic, just writing.
Right. All of it.
Writing. Okay. I'll give you that.
Okay.
What teacher left the most memorable impression on you?
Oh no, I don't want any of my teachers to hear this. I'm in touch with a lot of my with a lot of my teachers when I was younger, but I'm going to say, probably my fourth grade teacher. Her name was Sister Ayn. I went to a private school, so we called our teacher Sister, and she was my favorite.
Well, that was, you don't have to, would you like to name some more? You can.
Probably my first grade teacher also, because when I was sick, I remember she let me put my head on her desk until my mom came to pick me up. Like, really small things like that are where I remember my teachers. My sixth grade teacher used to tell us stories about when she was a little girl, and I love them. Also, she changed my reading life forever, because she gave me a Toni Morrison book in the sixth grade.
Wow. Mm-hmm. It's funny, as you're talking, I'm going back to the first question I asked you about students feeling safe, happy, and loved in your classroom. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it just goes back to your experience that you had when you were in the classroom. That's pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. All right. So what tips would you give to a first year teacher, or a teacher that is trying to create this space or weave in sustainability and environmental justice, anything that we talked about, within their classroom?
I would tell a first year teacher to be their self. I know for me, it took me like 10 years, nine, maybe nine. I've been teaching for, this is my 14th year. So probably year nine or 10 before I felt like I knew what I was doing. And not because I didn't know what I was doing, I just never felt sure. Mm-hmm. And I think teachers need representation as much as students. We do so much of like providing representation for students. And so when I came to the Bronx, and at the time, my superintendent, she's not an executive superintendent of the borough, but she was the superintendent of just my district. And I saw her and she talked like people I knew. She looked like people I knew. And I was like, this is this Black woman being herself in this position of leadership. Mm-hmm. I also don't have to water down or change who I am to be successful. And so I would tell a first year or a brand new teacher, think about the things that they love. Again, if they're into sustainability, if they're into whatever it is, use that as your vehicle in your classroom and teach with that passion that you have for that topic, and it's going to come through for the students.
That's good. So where can folks find you on social media?
They can follow me on Twitter at Izzy Teaches, and it's Izzy with the IE. So IZZIE Teaches. Follow me there. Don't come for me on Facebook, because my Facebook is filled with my family. I have a huge family. I have like 50 first cousins and 10 aunts and uncles, and every one of them comments on my Facebook every day.
Well, I love that. I know what it's like to have a huge family. Okay. My children are the youngest of 21 grandchildren. Woo! So yes, so I understand. I understand. Anyone who follows me on Facebook, I'm like, listen.
Yep. You got comments from my cousins.
I can't account for any comments.
Nope. One of my cousins made a post yesterday. Was like, Izzy, how was your day at work? I'm like, you could call me. You can call me. Just call me. So please just follow me on Twitter.
Yes, that's the safest place. I get it. I understand. We are here.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for just sharing your experience in the classroom. Just thank you for what it is that you're doing with students, just providing a safe space, a happy space, a loved space so that they can thrive and be just comfortable with who they are. Oh, how so much of that is needed. Definitely right now more than ever, just a space to just be yourself. Make sure you follow her. She has some really, really cool ideas and just things that she's doing with her students that will change your life. So thank you for listening on this episode. Happy teaching.